Yeah, don't get us wrong. There's still going to be plenty of randomness to the show.
Of course, that's the name football, of the show. The other name is off topic.
But this is football.
What you want, we've got and it might be hard to listen, but it makes your rage glisten. Our voice is about the games. And you know, we talk about the latest goings, more so than any other, and our Mountain West matters. Well, will you listen to this podcast too? And you rant about this podcast too. Just a side where Jeremy analyzes some matches and kiss with Grin the Bridges. We do some good interviews. And you know, from Fresno all the way to Boise, from Logan down to Esty, they're calling out our name. Where will you listen to this podcast too? And you love this podcast too.
Welcome back. Mountain West Connection here. MWC Connection, that's a little website we do this little talky-talk about. Jeremy Moss here, Matt Kennerly, talking a couple bowl games and some news.
Yeah, a little bit busier than I think we may have expected. And, definitely a good Saturday if you're a Mountain West fan, all things considered.
2-0, baby. 2-0.
2-0.
All right, we'll get to the bowl games in moments, but we got a little bit of news we want to discuss about. And it's not how watch ESPN can be garbage at time, but we will just discuss everything else about football. So a little bit of news. Let's start with the most recent news, I guess. There's a couple coaching tidbits.
Okay.
Nevada has their new offensive coordinator.
And it's an interesting pick, I think, all things considered. Matt Mummy coming from Division III LaGrange College.
I'm assuming he's related to Hal Mummy. Is that correct?
Yeah, I believe he is Hal Mummy's son.
Basically the innovator of the spread offense.
To be more specific, he innovated the air raid offense.
More specific, air raid. So he would do six wide if he could.
He would. And I think it's an interesting choice because that was one of the things that, Jay Norvell, when he came in, he said they were going to throw the football. And when you look at, other teams that run the air raid around the country, like Texas Tech, Washington State, it's definitely a drastic change from what you have seen in Reno in recent memory, basically.
So is the pistol dead?
Maybe it is. I don't know.
He's coaching D3. How many years was he there? Not very long, I don't think. He's at third season at a D3 program. People are like, well, it's a D3. What's going on? Well, he's been a coordinator other places. It's not just a decent coach. He's not just been because of his name or because of anything. He's been around like other smaller programs, not smaller, but not a head coach at other programs across the country.
Yeah,
he went to University of Kentucky.
He was at New Mexico State most recently at the FBS level.
And Sage won by Lobos, or Aggie, excuse me. Sorry, Lobos fans. Sorry, I apologize for that insult. New Mexico State Aggies. Oh, man. He's been like a couple years at Davidson College, so he hasn't coached at a high level. But if you're there's positives and negatives to any coaching hire. Positive, he knows his dad. I don't want to say it's just because his dad, but he's probably learned a bunch from him.
Oh yeah,
he went to University of Kentucky. He coached at the FBS level. He's been a head coach. I don't care what level you're at. If you're a head coach, that's a good person to bring on.
And I mean, in past stops, if you just look at his career profile on the LaGrange Panthers website, his offenses have set records at different places. Like it mentions that they set individual and team records in 2013, which I believe was his first season at LaGrange.
Yes.
But even most recently, you're talking about results on the field. LaGrange finished fifth in the Division III in total passing offense, and they did it while averaging about 7.7 yards per attempt. Their quarterbacks had 35 touchdowns. It was about 365 yards per game. So I think it's interesting to see how that'll translate, you know, because I think we know that their quarterback next year is probably going to be Ty Gianji, unless something unanticipated happens. It'll be interesting to see how well it meshes with the skill players that they have coming back, because, you know, Andrew Salas, I think, has capabilities as a big play guy. You know, Wyatt Demps is pretty good, had a pretty good campaign this year. But it'll be interesting to see how well James Butler fits in, because I think when, you know, in the last couple of years, we expected him to be the guy that really kind of carries the offense. But it'll be interesting to see how much of a workload or what kind of a workload he gets, because we know he's a very good pass catcher. And I'm wondering just how much they'll lean on him to do that kind of thing in this new offense.
You would think it's a good thing to bring up, because if you're coming from an offense that you ran work, yeah, score a lot of points, but all through the air. Like, he was his first year as, he led Division III in passing yards per game. Six in 2014. So, in 2013, he was the OC there. So, 14, 15, 16. He's been one of the better defenses in that level. But I don't think he's a dumb guy, because you're coming into a new system. Yes, you may pass more, but you have one of the best running. He's, depends who comes back, because Brian Hill says he'll decide after the bowl game. There's a report McNichols is gone. So there's potentially, they could have the best running back in the conference next year.
Oh, yeah.
And so I don't think you'd want to put that to waste, but they'd have other ways to get him the ball, whether it's a few more passing attempts or passing targets his way. But I don't think they're going to just strip it and change it just because that's what I run. It's similar to a, it's like what Brady Hoke did at Michigan. I'm going to, or not Brady Hoke, but Rich Rodriguez. I'm going to run my system no matter who I have. That's a dumb thing to do. You got to ease it in, because when you look back at, I'll go back, Brady Hoke, I'm thinking of San Diego State. Hoke came from Ball State to San Diego State. Aztecs ran, I believe, when it was Chuck, I think Chuck Long was the coach before, I want to say.
Mm-hmm.
They're more of a spread team, like not necessarily spread, but like passing oriented. And so Hoke slowly integrated his type of offense, which is more ground-based, kind of what we see San Diego State now. More running the ball, they'll pass when they need to. They threw a bit more because they had Ryan Lindley there at QB, but I would expect them to do something like that. Just move, like, smooth in and put in wrinkles of your offense until you have the personnel there. And that's a smart move to do, so I'm assuming that would be the case. That would make the most sense. That's what I would do. If I were ever to be some high-level coach and I had a different system, I wouldn't just say my system works and be done with it. It's not like you've seen Remember the Titans, correct?
Oh, I'm assuming.
He's like, I got eight plays or whatever it is, and we're going to run these plays no matter what. It's high school, so it's different, but you got to mesh together until you have your guys. I'm hoping that's what they would do to have the most success.
Well, and see, what I think makes the air raid interesting, though, is that it's not necessarily about throwing the ball down the field or anything like that. So I don't know if moving from what Nevada did to what they're going to be doing is as drastic as, say, moving from, you know, pro-style offense to a spread offense. And if you consider what Gianji was doing when he actually, you know, came in and took over as the starter, you know, he was roughly middle of the pack in conference play in pass attempts per game. You know, he was, you know, eight touchdowns, six interceptions. So maybe he was a little bit careless with the ball at times. But, you know, he was middle of the pack in completion percentage, middle of the pack in yards per attempt. And so I think that asking him to throw the ball a little bit more won't be quite as drastic as, you know, a lot of people might think that it is.
Yeah, he threw about 18 attempts per game, so.
Yeah.
And it could just be, well, and it's weird because he did have, it's skewed though because that's per season. Once he actually started playing, because I pulled up his stats right now, I looked at the base stats, like 17 attempts per game.
Mm-hmm.
But once he's a starter, 43 of Wyoming. Here's the pass attempts, 43, 34, 37, 26, 22.
Yeah, exactly. That's what I mean.
Yeah, he's sorry, maybe I was looking that up and hear what you're saying, but I guess you're saying I'm agreeing with that. If they're going to throw 35 times a game, not an issue. So, good move for them. We'll see. I kind of thought Norville might go with somebody a bit more experienced, but I don't even know how the two are connected, really. I didn't look that deep into it, because this just came out a little while before we decided to record. But if you're setting records at any level, you're doing good things. So, next piece of news. Let's, really quick about, you know, San Jose State has a new head coach there.
Yes.
Al Borges has been their coordinator for a while. Mm-hmm. Results that have been not great, I'll say, at least this year.
Mixed.
It helped last year when you have NFL running back Tyler Irvin on your roster. You look really good with that.
It did not help when you have basically an offensive line that blocks about as well as I would if I were part of it.
It's a bunch of Play-Doh, what that is, the offensive line they had this year. Let me mold my path. I'll walk right through every time. And then they lose their best receiver, but Al Borges, who may or may not have a job, could be heading to Notre Dame. There's a couple reports. Some say he's interviewing with them, which I don't get the point of him interviewing for that type of job, just because he hasn't done great things at San Jose State. He was at San Diego State, did okay. Michigan, not very good. But then there's another one saying he's on campus, so... But the fact that he's considered just is mind-boggling.
Yeah, it is a little bit interesting, but you know, I've been following it the watch vaguely in the last few weeks, and you see some really interesting names being thrown around. Like one guy that has been mentioned off and on is Marcus Arroyo, who was a former Spartan quarterback, I believe, who was actually being mentioned in the running for Fresno State's offensive coordinator job as well. Another guy that I think, you know, familiar name, Jeff Garcia, I think was mentioned at certain points.
Wow, has he even been coached? Is he coached ever, really?
That I'm not sure about. But, you know, I think they're looking for guys like Brennan, the new head hired, you know, the new head coach that they hired. Guys who, like, know the situation there and, you know, could probably come relatively cheap and... you know, try to make a difference in, because I don't think they're that far away from being interesting. I know I've said that before. You know, obviously they're going to be missing Kenny Potter next year, but they have interesting skill position players. If they can rebuild the offensive line, that I think is probably the most pressing concern for them in San Jose, but obviously we'll keep an eye on that situation as it develops.
We will. Another quick news, you brought up Fresno. They're another coaching move, because we'll get to games, but they bring in Orlando Steinauer. Is that how you say it? Steinauer?
I believe it's Steinauer, yes.
Okay, Steinauer, coming from CFL to Fresno State to, what is he doing there? He's the defensive coordinator.
Yeah, I mean, it's hard for me to say too much about him just because I had never watched the CFL ever. So, I mean, I imagine there's probably going to be a little bit of a learning curve, you know, moving from, you know, different physical dimensions of a field and, you know, a more wide open passing off, you know, dealing with passing offenses week after week, which if you think about it, could be kind of useful because...
He does know there's four downs, right?
He does know. I'm assuming he does. But, I mean, I imagine it would be kind of useful to... have to deal with pass heavy offenses week after week, because that's kind of what the college game is all about these days.
Yep.
But, you know, I think taken in tandem with the kinds of recruits that they're bringing in so far, you know, they brought in a few guys in the secondary to compete going into 2017. I'll keep an open mind about it. I think it's an interesting hire. I don't know too much about him, but we'll see how it shakes out in the spring.
Was he on Coach Tedford's staff in the CFL?
I don't remember. I know I looked it up at some point. I just don't remember one way or the other. What's interesting, though, is I was doing some research, and this isn't the first time that Tedford has picked a guy from the CFL to be a coordinator. When he was first hired at Cal back in 2001, he did the same thing when he hired George Cortez as his offensive coordinator. And, you know,
It's just an interesting move.
Yeah, I was going to say, I mean, as rough as things ended for him at Cal, I think it's kind of hard to argue with the results of, you know, making that kind of move the first time around.
Yeah.
So in that respect, it's worth giving the benefit of the doubt, I think.
And it looks like he just coached against them. So they weren't on the same BC line staff that one year in 2015. So it's an interesting move, but we'll see. Like, people give us crap about Tedford, but I don't think you or I want them to fail. I don't think, obviously, more you than even I, because you're at the university, it's your school, you want a fun football team to watch. I just think it's okay people complaining about questioning moves, because people think I'm going to blindly accept what my university does no matter what, and that's a terrible thing to do.
Yeah, well, what can you do?
On to San Diego State, so keep it with this topic.
All right.
we'll get to the game. So I woke up to Twitter. I slept in today. I get up to Twitter. I'm like, ugh, this again?
doing battle with Aztecs fans who feel disrespected.
Not just that. We're going to be out of this conference in 5 years. Guarantee it. We've heard this all last offseason. I don't want to go through it again.
I mean, within 5 years, I'm not going to put it a 0% chance. You know, it's not going to happen within the next year or two. But I think a lot of it will depend on the things that are kind of outside the win or loss column. Like, I think if they can get an on-campus stadium, that'll help immensely with their case. You know, I think we know that San Diego is kind of an attractive TV market. That always helps in this, you know, day and age. You know, I'm not going to say no. You know, within the next 7 years, they probably have a better case than, you know, they definitely have a better case than Fresno. Let's put it that way. They probably have maybe the second or third best case at worst in the conference.
Yeah, because football and basketball, to agree, are an impact. And their basketball team's done well the past couple of years, longer than that. And football finally back-to-back 11-win seasons, which is something they've never done ever.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, I hope, like, if you go just by on the field stuff, it's in TV a little bit, it's probably Boise and San Diego State at the top, and then CSU in that mix, those three teams. Maybe UNLV, because if they're similar to San Diego, you get their own stadium that's not parked on gravel.
Yeah.
For the parking lot, retractable roof, all the a nice stadium. They're a growing market, but I get 5 years is a long way away, but people seem like it's a foregone conclusion they're going to go somewhere. During the Big 12 talk, their name was like 10th on the list, and they weren't even mentioned half the time. And it's like, be realistic, Aztec fans. You're a good team. You've won 22 games in 2 years. However, part of that can be argued. You play in a West Division that's garbage for the most part. You only beat two teams with winning records this year, and you split with one of those in Wyoming. And not to bring it up, but South Alabama, man, come on.
I mean, my argument all along has been, yes, you know, the West Division has been down in the last couple of years. But at the same time, they've dominated that division
for sure.
You would expect a team that's good, or, you know, if we're going to borrow Bill Connolly's perilous term, elite, you know, that's the kind of result that you expect to see from a team that's far and away the best team in the division. And, you know, we'll get to this in a minute when we start talking about the Las Vegas Bowl. You know, they weren't just dominating the division too. They came back. They have won back-to-back conference titles, which how many other group of five teams have done that these days? Arkansas State, I believe, is the only other one.
They have like 5-0 or something.
Yeah, Arkansas State's kind of on a whole another level down there in the Sun Belt.
In the past couple of years, Houston lost this year. American, yeah, it's not many. It's any, not just them, but Power 5. I know Alabama's won a couple in a row, but it's difficult. Pac-12 had a new winner this year. It's difficult to win back-to-back titles.
And I think it matters entirely on your perspective. Like, you can say, oh, yeah, well, they've lost South Alabama. Or you could look at it and say, it's very, very hard to be perfect. And this is the same thing that I would tell to Boise State fans who are not happy at having won, you know, the division 2 years in a row. You're still in the top 20. You're still winning 10 games a year, and that's the kind of status that a lot of teams in the conference and elsewhere in the country would kind of kill for.
Yeah, their losses happen to be conference losses to two really good teams.
Yeah.
It's just like, I'm just tired of it because they're like, they treat it like it's a piece of trash. We know it's not the best league, but they seem like, here's where my issue is with them. Yeah, I joke South Alabama, but when it gets to the point where they're not listening, I'll just throw that out there because it's kind of fun to do and joking a little bit.
Yeah.
But the thing is, thinking that they're head and shoulders above this whole league is completely false.
You're going to have to win another conference title or two to start thinking that way.
Or win a, go to a Cotton Bowl or a Fiesta Bowl. Go do that. That's what I'm saying. Like, they're one of the best teams in this. They're probably top 30 team right now. This thing is, Bill's right too. Like, San Diego, there should be no reason they're winning during their stretch for how many years they're terrible. There's no reason this team should not be winning a minimum 8 games every year, no matter what, barring very few exceptions. Great recruiting area. Yes, they're in the Pac-12 area, but it's not like you're next door to UCLA. Ask South Florida how it is being next door to University of Miami.
Mm-hmm.
University of Houston, a little different, but like looking at those schools, like if you're sitting in Northern California, San Jose State, how are they recruiting with Stanford when they're good or Cal? You know what I mean? Like they have a little buffer, enough of a buffer where kids who want to stay home can decide, okay, I'm really good enough to go to UCLA or USC. Those are equals, but like San Diego State is I know it's 80 or 90 miles from LA, but there's a small enough buffer where they should be able to get talent there. People should want to go to San Diego.
Mm-hmm.
Like, honestly, if you're getting offers from San Diego State or Indiana, come on, Illinois, Purdue, I'm just saying. Sorry to pick on the Big Ten, but just saying, like, if you're getting these schools, Oklahoma State when they're bad, or Baylor when they're bad, or Texas Tech,
mm-hmm.
where would you rather, if your experience is to go to college, play football, and have fun? San Diego or Lubbock, Texas? It's a no-brainer, you know what I mean?
Oh, yeah.
I'm just saying, unless you're like a quarterback or receiver, Texas Tech, obviously, but there's always certain situations, but where they're at, there should be no reason they've had this dry spell prior to the past, so prior to Brady Hoke bringing them out of the dead. They should always be not necessarily 11-win good, but there should be, like I said, 8-win should be the baseline for this program. Maybe it's going to get there now, but they just should, but I'm just tired of... I know it's not everybody. We're not picking on it at all, but people just come out for random reasons. We hate the league. You guys hate them. You're only showing Wyoming highlights in the title game. Well, sorry, Wyoming had good plays in the title game. Long passes. Those are better than watching Donald Pumphrey go 5 yards every time and get a touchdown. Very good effort, but a 40-yard touchdown pass in the back of the corner of the end zone, I'm just saying, what would you rather watch for a highlight? I don't care if a guy runs 6 yards every time he touches the ball. It's more fun to watch a downfield passing game.
Well, okay, and let's put it this way before we move on to the next thing. You know, we've talked at length in the last couple of years about how the, you know, strength of schedule has been kind of a hindrance for them, as well as the games that they've lost that maybe they shouldn't have. Is it a stretch to say that they are one of the teams in the conversation for that New Year's Day Bowl in the next 2 years?
They should be. They were this year until they lost to, South Alabama again, but they lost. I'm just saying, I think they should be. They bring back, is Rashard Penny coming back next year as well?
I believe he is, yeah. And not only him, but Juwan Washington.
Mm-hmm.
But and I believe, what I was going to say.
They have talent there, obviously.
Because what I was going to say is, you know, in the next couple of years, you're not going to be able to say that, you're not going to be able to use that same argument, because in both 2017 and 2018, in their non-conference schedule, they have home and homes with Arizona State and Stanford. And both of those have the potential to be very good opponents. So
they sure do. But also, it's proven to, like this year and every year. Well, not this year, but when Boise State went to the Fiesta Bowl, when Houston went to the Peach Bowl, you can afford a loss and still get to that position.
But if things break their way, they're going to be in the conversation one way or another.
Yeah. So things are good there. It's just... One last thing, I'm just, again, like saying they should be going to the I don't know what conference, the Pac-12, if they ever want teams, maybe, but there's no, in the immediate future, there's nowhere for any school trying to move up to get in to go anywhere. And so, cool your Jets, Aztecs fans, just ones that are going crazy. So
there you go.
Yeah, look at next year really quick. Yeah, they get UC Davis win, but they go to Arizona State, host Stanford. And if NIU turns it around, that could be a challenging game for Northern Illinois. So
there you go.
All right, so let's get to the Las Vegas Bowl itself. I thought Houston was going to run away with this game at the beginning.
You know what? I kind of did too, but I think in the end, is it fair to say that you had this pretty much nailed down?
I kind of did. There's going to be a chance. They're just going to keep running and running and running and finally break through. And third quarter, they finally broke through.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of an interesting game to watch just because, you know, I feel like both defenses played really well. I feel, obviously, the Aztecs had, you know, very significant advantages by picking off Greg Ward 4 times. And how many sacks did they have? Did they sack Greg Ward again just now?
I think 6 times, I believe. I'll check, but a lot.
Well, the box score says 7, but I could have sworn I saw somebody on Twitter say like 8 or 9 or 17 or something like that.
I look for the official. Yeah, it says 7 on the box score from ESPN. I'll check more official sources.
But it was interesting to watch the game progress because it seemed like really early in the first couple drives, you know, both of the defenses were playing like super well. Like I made kind of a brief joke on our Twitter feed about how San Diego State should run the block Ed Oliver play. Because, you know, he got into the backfield and took down Pumphrey, I think like 4 or 5 yards behind the line of scrimmage. And it was just kind of like, ooh, I mean, that seemed like the kind of thing that would make it a really long afternoon. But what ended up happening is that, you know, the Houston offense never found traction, and the San Diego State defense made plays. You know, and if you look at, you know, their scoring drives when they eventually did get on the board, you know, when they kicked their first 2 field goals in the first half, they started at their own 40 and they started at the Houston 37. And then when they finally broke through and started scoring touchdowns later in the game, they started at their 32. They had the pick six, and then they started at the 28 and the 21 of Houston. And that is a significant field advantage. You know, I think you may have talked about the fact that, you know, Rashard Penny could make a difference, you know, as a kickoff returner. Mm-hmm. That didn't really happen at all, but that's, they didn't really need it because the defense was making plays left and right.
True. And also, one thing about the game, I think I saw a stat was Pumphrey's like at minus six at one point or something in the first half. And then he just bust off, I think, end up with 115. Technically broke Ron Dane's record for all-time rusher. Actual, if you count every stat, he's third overall, which is still amazing. But because I didn't know the Sports Reference actually has the complete stats for bowl games, title games, and everything. Yeah. So that's all, it's always cool to look at. So he's technically third, but number one overall officially by the NCAA. He finally broke through. It's like they're just stopping him every single time. But where it changed was, like you said, the second half, yes, they had 3 straight interceptions, and there was the pick six. But their defense, Houston's defense, had to get extremely tired because this is what the final 10 drives for Houston. Three and out, pick, 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 punt, turnover on downs, 3 straight turnover on downs, end the game with the interception. Yeah, if you're going that quick and your defense has no time to rest, I don't care what defense you have, you're going to struggle against that when you're... It's like I say before, if you have those quick air raid offenses or that score like in 3 plays or hurry up offenses and they go 3 and outs and they're 90 seconds or something on the field, that's basically what happened. Once they started getting quick possessions, Houston could... It's just hard to recover, and that shows a couple things. Depth, which at this level... The Houston level, Aztec level, it's not amazing, but that's what happened in this game when San Diego State just pounded it, and defense made plays and didn't allow that Cougar defense to get more than a couple minutes rest in between possessions.
See, I think that's kind of yes and no, because to start with, it took San Diego State a long time to convert a third down.
Sure did.
And, you know, even on the day, once they actually did, you know, get a 11-yard pass to David Wells, they were only 2 of 12. And one of those was the last touchdown by Juwan Washington to basically ice it. So, you know, and it wasn't as though they were in third and unmanageable situations. Like, you know, the first two were, you know, third and 10, third and 14. But after they made their first conversion, it was, you know, third and 5. And it was a 1-yard run by Ryan Agnew, or, you know, third and 6, and it was an incomplete pass to Pumphrey.
Why is Ryan Agnew running the ball? Come on.
Yeah, well, yeah, that's true. you know, so you have to give credit to the Houston defense, I think, because they were put into a really unforgiving situation, and I think they played about as well as you could expect. Because if you look at the stat line, you know, there was basically no difference at all in total yards. It was, you know, 255 to 254 in favor of San Diego State. And, you know, even though they didn't have quite that many sacks, you know, they did, you know, get to Chapman a couple times really early, and they did finish with 10 tackles for loss.
Well, they did well. They, like, looking into the second half as well, like, during that stretch I mentioned, like, Aztecs had a 3 and out. They had a couple times where they went 3 and out, had to punt the ball, so... It was just the short, because even on the short fields, like, they scored a pick six off one. They did score a touchdown another, but they had to punt, and I believe the other interception, what was that? Let's see here. They weren't scoring all these points didn't come off turnovers, so it wasn't pick six, but they weren't, where's the other? Oh, it was just the end of the game, never mind. That one doesn't really count, but they only scored 14 points off turnovers out of 4 picks. It's good, But it's not like they could have. It could have been a lot worse, I guess, this game. But the defense for both teams did good. Houston did well. They're put some tight spots. But like you said, all those tackles for loss basically shut down Pumphrey in the first half. Like, they were getting nothing done in the first half. And mm-hmm. I think it's just a point where I think it's a combination of a lot of things. Aztecs have a good offensive line, a good running back. And if you get tired and you're playing a physical team, it's going to wear on you. And that's a little bit what happened on some of those drives. Like, the drives weren't extremely long. Like, a second half touchdown to go up 13-10. Or was that six? Yes. Sorry. Whenever that was, you had a four-play drive. Then you had a pick six. And then they had a one-play touchdown drive and a four-play. These weren't. So you're right as well. These weren't Aztecs doing what they do sometimes. 18 play drives. These were all quick strikes, partly because of short fields. Yeah. And that's part of it too, but they weren't wasting clock. They weren't spending 6 minute, 8 minute, 10 minute drives.
Yeah, not like they usually do, right?
No, well, when you're given 40 yards, it's kind of hard to do that.
Yeah. And I mean, but what really stood out to me is the fact that, you know, all those sacks, like, they just never let up on Greg Ward. And I felt kind of bad after a while watching this game. Just because, you know, it wasn't just Calvin Munson. Munson only had one sack. It was basically, it seemed like everybody was getting to the quarterback. You know, Alex Barrett had a sack in the middle of the defense. Kyle Kelly had a sack. You know, Ronley Lakalaka had a sack.
Seven players were credited with at least half a sack.
Yeah, that's insane.
And then they also had another 11 TFLs because the rushing attack had, 25 total? Another sack yardages, but 25 yards. 0.6 a rushing attempt or sack.
Well, and not only that, like, the defense just played super disciplined, which I think was something that slipped a little bit when they were struggling earlier in November. You know, even on those first drives when it was, you know, basically back and forth before Houston broke through first, and what really stood out to me in the entire game is, you know, the secondary especially, like, coming up against this kind of offense, you need to be proficient at tackling. And they were, you know, Malik Smith had 5 tackles. Parker Baldwin had 9 tackles. Ron Smith had 10 tackles. He was tied for the team lead in that regard. You know, they needed the secondary to play its absolute best against an offense that wanted to go fast, wanted to do a lot of quick strikes, get their receivers in space to make plays. And San Diego State just basically didn't let them. And that was, to me, the most impressive part of the entire game.
Well, yeah, there's that, and watching a lot of this game in the first half, Ward was evading, missing tackles. Like, Aztecs weren't letting him. There's one play I saw. I don't remember what it was, but, like, he evaded, like, 3 or 4 tackles or something, like, going back and forth. He ended up getting, like, 2 yards on the play. But, like, he went left, went right, spin move, turn around, just being swarmed and got, like, 2 yards. Those are the plays where Greg Ward usually makes something big happen, and that could cause trouble, any defense causing trouble if you can sidestep the pocket and have a play last 8 seconds and you only give up a yard or two. He was doing that a lot, slipping and sliding through defenders, but he wasn't getting huge. Like, again, I don't know how many sack yardages he lost because that's counted into rushing. He had 0 rushing yards. So I know he got more than that because sacks, but, like, there was times where that number could have been huge had he beat one guy, but Aztec guys were playing their spots and just kind of when they finally got hold of on him, they weren't letting him. They're basically letting him go, not letting him, but he was able to go left and right, but not up and down the field when the pocket or something collapsed on him. And yeah, so there's that as well. Like, they were, again, because that could cause issues. If you see QB doing that, sometimes a DB step up, linebackers get out of coverage a little bit. Like, I'm going to get him because he's going to take off, and then he'll stop and throw. And it's like, oh, crap, I'm screwed for, like, a 40-yard gain because I let a guy go right behind me in the middle of the field.
Yeah.
And so you're right. Defense played very disciplined, especially after the first quarter. No points given up the rest of the way. This was a dominant victory from basically midway second quarter. The final 40 minutes was all Aztecs
pretty much.
Anything else you need to add for this 11-1 season for San Diego State?
I think it kind of speaks for itself at this point.
Really quick, will they be ranked in a couple weeks?
They should be.
Should be, yes. All right, next game. The wind game. That's terrible. Very windy in the New Mexico Bowl. Also, the guy who won tickets from us had a great time, so appreciate that.
Awesome.
You had a fun time eating hot dogs and burgers and parking and treated to a pretty good game for the most part. This game, like, you saw, I assume you saw, like, all the videos and stuff of the wind, goalpost shaking and everything, right?
Oh, yeah.
So, okay, Lobos win 23-20. Great for them. Good job. There is one touchdown the end of the first quarter. They call a timeout to keep the wind at their back, like at the 2-yard line.
That's smart.
It is smart because, like, you saw extra points or field goals or whatever kicking in pregame. You're just slicing and dicing left and right, whichever side you're on, or the side of without the wind, or with the wind, I would say. Either way, the wind coming at you or against you is never good, because even it's at your back, it can cause issues. So they went for the touchdown. They scored the touchdown. That means they had an extra point behind their back for the win and the kickoff. So that was a pretty smart move. But, dude, how do you make a 52-yarder in that condition, man? That was nuts.
Jason Sanders is very quietly a very good kicker.
Yeah, he missed an extra point, but nailed the 52-yarder.
He'll figure.
But this game, so Lobos, I didn't realize, maybe we didn't prepare well enough, but I'm assuming this might have been strategically that Austin Apodaca only had two attempts in this game due to those windy conditions.
I was going to say, I mean, if you compare what New Mexico normally does with what I think UTSA normally wants to do, you know, the UTSA, the Roadrunners wanted to be balanced, which is something that I mentioned in the preview. But Dalton Sturm just kind of had a game to forget. Like, he only finished 10 of 26, you know, two touchdowns, one interception, which is fine. But, you know, especially in that first half, he really struggled with the elements. I think he was only 3 of 16.
Yeah, something bad, something terrible.
Before he put it together late. And he had that interception that was a really athletic play by Lee Crosby. It was just kind of a, you know, tough game to watch because especially, you know, they wanted to pass the football, but it was interesting that they didn't just try to run the football a little bit more because between, you know, Jarvion Williams and...
everybody.
Yeah, and Jalen Rhodes, you know, between the two of them, they had a lot of success running the football. I think they combined for almost 200 yards and about six and a half yards per attempt.
Yeah, they did. And Sturm had 50 of his own.
Yeah, and so it was kind of interesting that they were able to move the ball on the ground. So I thought it was curious that they kept trying to make plays through the air when clearly it just wasn't working for them.
It's tough, and also fewer chances for field goals in this game because there's a one point in the first quarter where they had to go for it on... This is not a close field goal by any means, but at the 31-yard line, 4th and 7, they didn't even, like... I don't know what the wind was. I think, assuming the wind was at their face, because if New Mexico called the timeout, it was at their back. So 4th and 7 to 31, that's a 48-yard field goal. That's long for anybody, even if conditions are ideal at the college level. They incomplete pass, but it's like that's some of the stuff where I know what it's part of the game you're playing outside, but that can cause issues. Why? It's kind of the same reason New Mexico went for it the drive before where they turned it over on down. Or no, that was, before they, like, turned it over on downs. And so, because New Mexico did the same thing, they were farther back, but they're at the 41-yard line. It's like, well, I don't want to punt because the wind's at their back. It'll sail out of bounds. And they go for it and no gain for Gibson on 1st and 1, which is pretty tough to do to stop him. But Lobos nearly pulled away, but at the end of the game, man, here come the Roadrunners coming back, and they nearly got this victory.
Yeah, and I think that, you know, that's also a credit to the fact that, you know, the Lobos were aggressive on fourth downs, but so were the Roadrunners. I think they both finished 2 of 3 on fourth downs. And, you know, I think that's something that we'll have to keep an eye on going into next year for this Lobos defense, because they were a little bit uneven this year defending the run or defending the pass. It seemed rare that they had complete games. And when you consider that, you know, the Roadrunners were mostly able to keep the running game in check, like they only averaged 4.2 yards on the ground, the Lobos did. I know. Yeah. I mean,
long was 27, too. That's it.
Because it seemed like New Mexico had it in hand pretty much the whole time. I felt like it should have been a little more of a convincing victory than it was. I mean, obviously, New Mexico fans are probably going to take the W no matter what. Yeah, that might be just kind of nitpicking on my end.
A little bit, but they were held below their average. Like, they averaged 6.6 yards per attempt all year. They only get 4.2. Gibson was 3rd in rushing with 60 yards, and half of that came on one play. And they weren't getting the big plays they normally do. And so there's the issue. And with the defense, like, I remember a couple weeks ago, or maybe a month, I'm like, oh, this defense is terrible. You pointed out, well, it's not. I think it's, you're right, it's more inconsistent. Mm-hmm. It's not like, look at Boise State. They allowed, what, 500 yards in the air or something? Five touchdowns to Brett Rippon. But I think where it comes down to even more, I looked a little bit closer the other day because I was looking at a couple things. It's their scoring defense, which is not very good. That's the issue with them. Like, they give up, like, their passing defense, total defense for yards is about almost middle of the pack overall, but their scoring defense is near the bottom, sitting at 31 points per game.
Yeah.
And that's where you can give, I don't care if you give up a million yards a game, but if you give up 10 points, that's great. I think going forward, like, I've said it forever. They need a little bit better of a passing game and a defense that's at least average in every category. If they can go and give up 24 points a game, that's a touchdown less, they'd beat stupid Rutgers, you know what I mean? Beat New Mexico State. They probably would have won this division had they defense given up six points less per game.
Hard to argue.
And so, and they're a team to watch. Like, they do, like, I was watching one play. It's like they had a what was it? I formation, pistol eye, three guys behind the quarterback. Nobody went in motion. They just called the play from that. I'm like, okay, go for it. And then, and just really quick, to wrap this game up, UTSA made it 23-20, trailed by three on a long, they had two long drives, end of the game. That's where the defense just kind of failed them a little bit. Was it a, what did they have, 2 10-play drives or something like that, extended drives? Onside kick, Lobos recover, they win. But congrats to Lobos. I believe this is their fourth bowl win ever.
Mm-hmm.
They've won two bowl games since 07. Prior to that, 1961. Then prior to that, 1945.
Good for them.
So what does Rocky Long have to say about this? Because he basically said the university or team, nothing more can do here when he left about 6 years ago. 8 years ago.
I mean, I don't know. I just kind of hope that New Mexico fans start coming out next year because...
Dip in attendance this year.
They lose a couple of key pieces, I think, on both sides of the football, but I would expect them to probably just be as dangerous as ever going into 2017.
It should be, assuming they keep Bousseau there. I'm surprised he hasn't gotten a job anywhere else. The OC came up from Sam Houston State, still sticking around, or at least as of right now. I don't think Bob Davies going anywhere, just because I know this is not his style of play. He did at Notre Dame and all the other Texas. I think he's at Texas A&M before that, more of a defensive guy.
Mm-hmm.
But he's at the age where I don't think he cares to go to a better job. You know what I mean? Like, he was already at Notre Dame, did obviously not the best because he got fired from there. But he's at the age where, first off, do teams want him to go run this offense at? Say Purdue wanted him, you know what I mean, or some job that's been open, like University of Texas, or some job that's not going to want this style of offense, even though it's not his thing. Because do people really know what his offense is anymore? He's defensive coordinator forever. Notre Dame runs a similar offense, whoever their head coach is. He hires the OC from Sam Houston State to run this offense. Do people even know what his offensive identity is if they want him as a head coach anywhere else?
Good question.
So that's why I think he's going to stick around for a while. I am surprised that their OC hasn't gone anywhere. But then again, Georgia Tech took a big risk on Paul Johnson to bring the triple option to the ACC. So, anything else to add? Are we pretty good here with these two wrap-up games, I guess?
I think so.
All right, that's our show for tonight. We'll have another show probably within a couple days, previewing the next three games through Christmas Eve, Hawaii Bowl, Poinsettia Bowl, and the famous Potato Bowl, Idaho versus Colorado State. But subscribe to our podcast. We would like for you to subscribe as many times as possible. If you're at a university, go log in and just subscribe on various computers on the open iTunes, because people don't lock their computers all the time. So go do that. Go subscribe. But we're on SoundCloud, Stitcher when it decides to work, Blog Talk Radio, basically your favorite podcast app. We're there. So we'll see you guys next time. Again, check us out, mwcconnection.com. And it's, I think it's very timely, or suffice to say that we are biased against your team.